10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to 1UP Club's Heads Up Podcast here on the 1UP Club Podcast Network and the Trending Topics Network. My name is Brian, and on this week's show, we're bringing you some of the latest, most up-to-date news from the video game industry. By we, of course, I mean multiple me's. And today, the other me is actually GameBlock.com's very own Ryan Hamner. What's going on, Ryan?
Nothing. How you doing today, buddy?
Doing fantastic because I'm done with work and don't have to worry about it until, 11 o'clock tonight. So
the rest of the day you can focus on video games then.
That's right, or sleep. One of the two.
So sleep comes into play as well, you know. It's as much as we love to game, the older I get, the more I love to sleep, which kind of sucks. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, for real.
Just think when the inevitable Sony VR sleep simulator comes out, we can kind of like morph two of our favorite things together. There's going to be some outstanding trophies for that game.
If they had like a soundproof helmet, I would completely buy into the Sony VR experience if they had a sleep simulator.
It's probably in the works somewhere in Sony's labs.
I hope so. But yeah, I've actually been pretty much too busy to actually even game recently, which is kind of weird. Like, I've been doing this remodel in the basement of Toon Studios East, completely changing my gaming area, my TV watching area downstairs in the basement, which is actually doubles as Toon Studios East, where I do my podcasting from. So today I'm actually in the living room, as a matter of fact, with the dogs kind of laying on the couch just looking at me. As I nervously await them to randomly find another phantom ghost to just start barking at and interrupting the show. But yeah, so I've had virtually no time to play any games. Aside from a little bit of Top Gun for the Nintendo that my son and I recorded and put up on the 1UP Club's YouTube page, which... as you know, you peeked in for a little while we were playing. I forgot to turn our mics on. So it's just basically us playing. But if you do happen to catch that, just know that it was on the 30th anniversary of the release of Top Gun, the movie. And we had some really great commentaries. And him and I actually went back and forth about, that movie, the game itself, what he thought about that particular, game. Because Top Gun, is actually still a pretty fun game if you sit down and play it. We played the second mission of Top Gun, which came out, I believe, in 1989. So a few years after the original Top Gun game for the Nintendo. But yeah.
Just by watching the video, that looks like quite a difficult experience. You know, any time we talk about games that have a very high difficulty level, we talk about Battletoads. We talk about Ghosts and Goblins. The first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game on the NES comes up. Just based on what I was watching from you guys and like how punishing that game appears to be, Top Gun 2 should be in the mix in that discussion.
It is really odd. And I don't know if it's because of the time and how much games like that have changed over the years, and then you become used to something new and different, to where when you do revert to them, and I've spoke about this in the past, when you go back to those old games, the game theory that was used back then is just so much different, and you're dealing with the XY axis and BA, basically, as compared to today's controls, which are all analog, and you get 19 different buttons. You can release flak to try anti-missile flak and stuff like that, whereas basically there were missiles in the air in Top Gun. You could avoid the missile, and then if you turn back on yourself, you'd end up finding that missile again and be right in your screen, and you'd be dead.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point there, Brian, just by the very nature of the lack of controls. And of course, back then in 1989, we didn't know any better. You know, you just had the two buttons. I mean, that's how arcade cabinets were. That's how the home systems were. Handhelds were like that. I mean, the original Game Boy just had the standard B and A select start format with the directional pad. And so just by very nature, the games had to be like that. But the downside to that is they were just very, very difficult because your options were so, the developers' hands were so tied with how they could map these controls.
Yeah. Yeah, and they literally had to up the difficulty level in it, as well in different games like that. I mean, you look at your Contras, which was just basically just a platformer. So what they did is they'd always up the number of enemies, and really that was the only options they could do, where they'd make the enemies super fast. Which in Top Gun, I mean, it was really one of those things where if you flew the campaign missions, you'd be fighting airplanes and they'd be coming at you three at a time, and that was kind of challenging. But then they'd throw a group of three and a group of two coming at you, and then they'd throw submarines popping their heads up out of the water and also firing missiles at you. Provided a really, really solid challenge. It's one of the games that gets your retro juices flowing because you're like, man, this game is so hard, but it's fun. And so you get that thing in you, that the competitive juices start flowing, and you just kind of, you get that determination. You're like, I must beat this game because I know I can, and I've come close so many times. And so you're just motivated to just keep going with it.
Yeah.
And it ticks me off, too, because with everything that I've changed with this remodel, I've got the systems down there. I've gotten so many games, literally so many games in the past, I'm going to say month and a half, that I haven't even had a chance to play, because probably for the past 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, I've been doing this remodel, and I just need to finish it up. I've got so much of it done. And when it comes to the mudding and drywalling and all that fun stuff, it just takes time that I don't have enough of to begin with, let alone enough to actually get something that will take a little bit of patience to make it look right. Because that's what I want. I want it to look right down in the basement.
Yeah.
With this whole remodel thing. And I'm looking at, I've got Parasite Eve. I've got Prince of Persia for the Sega Genesis. I've got, what is it that I've got? I've got the Top Gun, the second mission that I need to keep playing. I've got just so many different games down there. As I was going through them, I'm like, when did I get this? I don't even know when I got this. Street Hockey 95 is garbage for the Super Nintendo.
just your bad. I've never even heard of this game before you picked this one up. I haven't seen any YouTube videos. I have no idea what the game is about. Based entirely on your description of it, what a steaming pile of trash that thing sounds like.
Yeah, and I'm gonna do it tomorrow morning. I promise everybody. I will set up the Retron 3 upstairs tonight before I leave for work. And in the morning, I will broadcast some of that live so everybody can see what a piece of garbage that actually is.
And that's frustrating because at one point, people don't realize that roller hockey was it was never huge, but I mean, do you remember back in the day when there was like, some kind of like Bay Area roller hockey league that ESPN2 would have? I mean, it would air at like 2:30 in the morning, but I mean, it was really, really cool because there was like ramps along the boards and guys would be like shooting up that. I think a goal from the blue line was worth like 3 points. I mean, it was crazy, for hockey period, a lot of hockey period kind of turned their nose to it because it wasn't genuine hockey. I had a blast watching that. And to see that in a video game form, if that would have been done properly and really captured the spirit of that Bay Area Hockey League, that would have made a great game.
Yeah, and it was back in like 96 and 97.
Yeah.
When this was really, really, really reaching its point. 95, 96, 97, that period of time. And you're right, it was on late at night, and because of that, I was probably actually the most consistent watcher of that those broadcasts, along with indoor soccer, which is a blast, because I worked at a telemarketing place until 11 o'clock at night, And it was about a half hour home, so I was getting home at like 11:30 at night, and then I'd sit down to eat something, and I'd play some Final Fantasy VII or whatever it is I would be doing in that evening, and or catching up on wrestling, and then switch over to ESPN2, like you said, after the rebroadcast of WCW Monday Nitro, whatever it was that I was watching. And I would just sit there and I'd just watch this roller hockey. And it was a blast because I played roller hockey and I always wanted to make those rolling end boards, that they would just kind of fly down there and almost be skating vertically, or horizontally rather, on the end boards, as they went in behind the net. And it was just so much fun. And I expected kind of to get the same feel out of the, Super Street Fighter 95 or whatever, Street Hockey 95. And it just didn't happen. I mean, they tried. You can tell they tried, but it was just a little bit nuts. So I promise Wednesday morning I will do a live broadcast of that. We'll say 9 a.m. So I'll do that and tweet that up whenever I'm about to go on.
And I took the time to Google while you were talking about it there, Brian. Pro Beach Roller Hockey, circa 1998, lasted 3 seasons on ESPN2.
Yeah, they had, like, Long Beach had a team, and...
You know, if ESPN was to make a quick buck there and release those 3 seasons on Blu-ray, I would pre-order that today.
Oh, it'd be cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you guys don't realize how awesome it was. Kind of like how you just described it, Brian, with the jumps on the end boards. It was kind of like, it had like an X Games kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Because guys would go shooting up there. I mean, you guys don't realize how big these ramps were. These guys would get like 4 or 5 feet of airtime going up on these ramps. I mean, they got hockey sticks. They're getting checked.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we got to stop talking about it. I'm getting all fired up for this.
It is. And if they were to rebroadcast it, I'm sure that they would get, like, quite a bit of play, especially
yeah.
in the Twitter age. It would be almost like Sharknado level.
Oh, yeah, that's a great comparison, yeah.
Yeah, but who knows? But you've actually been busy as well. Before we get too far into it, you went to the National Video Game Museum again the other day, sans your daughter. Was it a different experience going on your own?
Yeah, well, first of all, of course, when you don't have a kid along, and I love my daughter. I don't want anybody to think that. I love going and experiencing things with her. But when you're by yourself, you can go at your own pace. You know, you can take the time to kind of read the stuff like the Pong stuff, you know, they got a great big display that's nothing but Pong. That doesn't interest a 7-year-old girl at all.
Yeah.
But to me, I can take the time and look at how that series has evolved over the years, from the very first machine that ever came out all the way up to the later iterations of the series. Take the time to read all that stuff and just kind of go at my own pace. Plus they had changed things around a little bit. There was a couple new additions this time. It's just a great experience. You know, if you're in the Dallas area, it's worth the $12 to go check this thing out. It's just so much fun. It always makes me feel like a kid again.
Nice. I really do. I find myself extremely jealous because we don't have anything like that here in my area.
You've got the Steel Museum, though.
Yeah, yeah. We have the we actually have the Toonseum in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
If we want to drive an hour and a half to see it, where they do nothing but comic books and cartoons and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool.
That sounds cool. That sounds very cool.
Yeah, but, you know, still got to drive. But I wish we had a video game museum in the area, because that'd be a blast. But before we get into the news, which we will do momentarily, a few network notes for everybody. Maybe some news for you. I know that I did talk to you a little bit about it, Ryan, but Martin Scott. Mart has been on this show before. Scott was actually his partner with the Eat My Goal Barclays Premier League podcast. They will be bringing to you a new show here on the One Up Club, a podcast network, and that will be called One Up Power Up. In case you're interested, Martin Scott will be bringing you some of the latest news in gaming with a little bit more focus on PC gaming.
Nice.
Which is awesome because, quite frankly, I don't play on the PC very often, and so I don't keep up to date with that probably as much as I maybe should.
Yeah.
But Mart does promise that some crazy tangential stuff will likely be thrown in there as well during their podcast, so I'm looking forward to that. And like I said, you can find that exclusively on the 1UP Club Podcast Network and 1UP.club. I won't be appearing on the Trending Topics Network, as only this particular show will be on the Trending Topics Network. We're planning an E3 preview show. The initial plan at this point is to do that this weekend, which is Saturday, May 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern. So if you're interested, get a hold of me. Let me know that you want to be on. If the time happens to change, we will indicate that in a post at 1UP.club. Also, I'll throw that out on Twitter and Facebook as well. So be sure to look that up. That is Saturday, May 28th, I believe, 2016 at 9 p.m. Eastern. So we're going to be looking at what to expect with E3 this year, maybe a little bit of a look back last year, see kind of the same show that we did last year here, actually what was Toons, but is now 1UP.club. We're going to kind of take a look back at the previous year's E3 and what's transpired since then and whether or not last year's E3 kind of lived up to what we thought it would, the announcements and things like that, and also make maybe some predictions for this year's E3 show because it is just in less than a month at this point.
Yeah, when you first mentioned the E3 show, I'm like, why are you doing that so early? But you're not. I mean, E3 is only a couple of weeks away. I don't know where the time is going here. It's crazy.
That's because we're older.
I know. It's just, you hear like the old guys when you're young saying, oh, time flies. And you're like, whatever, Grandpa. you know what? Listen to those old guys. Well, we're now those old guys. Time flies, kids. Enjoy every second that you've got.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm really upset that I'm actually going to be on vacation during E3 this year.
You did not time your vacation all well this time.
I know. You know, I let my wife pick the dates and not even thinking, hey, could we do it after this? So she kind of took the first full week that she has off of school off, and then the following week was when we were going to do our vacation, and just so happens that that's the week of E3. So I'll be in Reno, Nevada, and Phoenix, Arizona, during E3 this year. So I'll try to keep up with it on the phone and whatnot, and you've got some stuff that you're planning on possibly doing, at GameBlock.com?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, during the press conferences, Sony for sure, I'm going to live tweet it as much as I possibly can. I plan on doing some stuff. We might be trying to mix it up as far as podcasts a little bit. Maybe try like a video podcast if we can get some people interested in that. I've already got a couple of people that have signed on. So yeah, we're going to be doing quite a bit of E3 coverage over on GameBlock.com for sure.
Nice. Look forward to that. So be sure to keep your eyes peeled. That's GameBlock.com with a hyphen. That's Game-Block.com. What we're going to do right now, we're going to head into the news. And we're going to start this week's news segment with a little bit of news about Rocket League. In case you've been paying attention or you've not been paying attention, Rocket League has actually been promised, kind of, to be the first cross-platform game, rather, to go from Xbox One to the PC. And it just so happens that today, at 6 p.m. Eastern, is the day that that becomes a reality. The update comes to users at 6 p.m. Eastern will be reflected in the Options menu, where there's a toggle to enable or disable matchmaking with cross-platform competitors, according to Polygon.com. Cross-platform play does not mean the PlayStation 4 yet. In March, Xbox announced that it was opening Xbox One to cross-platform play with other consoles included. However, they did state that that would be entirely up to developers to make that happen. As of right now, PlayStation 4 has been able to play against PC users since it launched, but Rocket League actually launched on the Xbox One much later. Like 7 months after the fact. So, Ryan, it's becoming a reality at this point. Do you think this is going to be a huge success and will bleed into other games?
It's just so hard to predict at this point, not just from a popularity thing, but from a technical standpoint as well. I mean, is this going to work as flawlessly as it has for everything else, or is this going to be a buggy, choppy technical experience? You know, it's just so much up in the air. I mean, it definitely has the potential to be a game changer, because you mentioned earlier about our new PC podcast. I mean, people still game quite a bit on PC. So if we could combine those two groups instead of separating everybody, letting everybody play together, I mean, it's taking us down a path that's it's a good direction to go in.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, if you're going to test this out, I guess Rocket League would be the game to do it with.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons, and first and foremost, because it was offered for free, and a lot of people do have it already, at least on PlayStation Network. And then you look at just the sheer popularity of the game to begin with. Whether it was given away for free or not, the game reached almost fever pitch levels of popularity among gamers.
That was your game of the year last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I stand by that. My son and I were actually playing it the other day. Actually for the first time in a long time that I was able to play it. And they added, like, basketball hoops and stuff like that to it, to where you could play a basketball version of the game, which I hadn't actually realized. So that was really different, because the ball would actually go up this certain slope that's basically around the basketball rim, but you wouldn't drive up the slope, and I just had such a hard time adjusting to that. I kept trying to drive up the slope. I'm like, ah!
That sounds very difficult.
Yeah. You have to try to change how you think about the game. But as far as the cross-platforming goes, I really hope it succeeds. And even if it's with some of the more simple games, I just think that it can only benefit gamers if they're able to make it happen. And I think that I'm pretty consistent in this one thing. If something benefits gamers, I am 100% behind it.
And honestly, Brian, a couple more reasons why this is such a great kind of a test subject, a guinea pig, if you will, to see if this works. You know, first of all, it's not a new game, so it's not a situation where people are going to, hey, why doesn't my brand new game that I just bought for X amount of money, and I know it was free, why doesn't my brand new game work? You know, we've seen that. We've seen issues with The Division, which got everybody all upset because it didn't work right off the bat. So, I mean, people, it just makes a good test subject to kind of figure out, like, is this going to work? Because people aren't going to lose their minds if there's a couple hiccups right off the bat.
Yeah. And it's just one of those situations where, you know, like, when you institute something like that, if it doesn't go well, I wonder how gamers handle it. But if it does go well, you know really quite well how they're going to handle it. Because, like, everybody wants this sort of thing. They want access to more gamers. As much as everybody likes to get into the little wars over what console is better, or what system is better, what platform is the best to have this game on, in the end, I think it will always come down to how good is the game and how many people can you experience the game with. And when you institute something like this, you open up the potential to just bring so many more gamers together. And I just, in the end, I think gamers want it to happen. And if it does end up failing, unfortunately, I think that what would happen would be, it would be a big knock on Microsoft, even if that's kind of an unfair thing, and just given the circumstances. But everybody should be rooting for it to work. I think if you're not, then there's something wrong with you, and you need to have yourself checked.
Yeah, I mean, let's just kind of leave the console fanboys at the door. You know, the fanboy wars at the door. I mean, I've been a PC or a PlayStation guy for quite a while now. I have horrible console envy for the Xbox One for a couple of reasons. Most notable, Forza. I mean, I love racing games. I have no problem admitting that Xbox has the better racing exclusive, and really, it's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good no matter what. If everybody just keeps an open mind about the fact that this is going to be essentially like a gigantic beta kind of run for this type of thing, that's the best way to kind of look at it, I would think. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see how it operates. We'll keep an eye on it and update you on it. Neither of us have the Xbox One, but that doesn't mean we can't watch the interwebs and let you know what the reception is. However, moving to the next story, we're talking about what benefits gamers all the time. And our next story has to do with Blizzard's latest release, which is Overwatch, which I find myself highly intrigued with and might actually pick up this week. You know, when the wife's out of town and I can get away with it. However, Overwatch, according to GameSpot.com, has released its price list for microtransactions. Now, this is a AAA game. Pretty much anything from Blizzard can be considered a AAA game, as Overwatch is. However, this shooter will have a variety of microtransactions available to players that come in the form of what they call loot boxes. These loot boxes range in price from $2 for 2 boxes up to $40 for 50 boxes. So if you want 2 loot boxes, you pay $1 a piece. You want 5 loot boxes, you pay $5 for the package, $1 a piece. 11 loot boxes for 10, 24 loot boxes for 20, and 50 loot boxes for $40, which roughly breaks down to 80 cents per box. They actually come with random customization items that do not impact gameplay, which makes me ask, why?
Yep, we're on the same page. As soon as you sent me this article this morning, Brian, and as soon as I got to that sentence that you just read, I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Why would you pay $40 for 50 random boxes? Hey, I got a jean jacket. You know,
yeah.
that's there we go. It doesn't give me any special armor or anything. You know, it's got a cool white snake patch on the back.
Ooh,
but,
right.
You know, it does absolutely nothing. Oh, wait, new voice lines. There we go. Yeah, I'm just like, what the hell? Seriously, don't be a sucker. Don't buy into this stuff. I mean, you don't need that. Just play the game.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where I just find myself wanting to scream no. And then not buy the game just based on principle alone. You're gonna do this?
Yeah.
At the same time, I have to take a deep breath. And then realize, you know what, if you buy an Xbox Live subscription or a PlayStation Plus subscription, you have the ability to buy an avatar for $1.99, $2.99.
Yeah.
Do I criticize Sony or Microsoft for doing that? No, I don't.
It's good. It's just good business. I mean, if you can find people that are willing to, you want the Victor Sullivan from Uncharted 4 avatar, you know, 99 cents. Actually, now that if that exists, I would actually buy that probably because I love Sully. But, you know, I mean, if you can make a buck, and granted, a dollar isn't that much. I mean, I would be willing to shell up for something like that. But $40 for 50 of these loot boxes that contain victory poses?
Yeah,
I mean, come on, you know, if it doesn't add something to the gameplay, if it doesn't give me some kind of, like, super powerful, like, shotgun or or armor or something like that, then we're talking something, I kind of get that, but if it's just costumes and skins, emotes and stuff like that, no.
And the discovery of the different boxes, that's what I actually love about some games, and one of the big things that I don't like about Star Wars Battlefront. That actually also makes me want to play Destiny is finding some of those things. I really don't buy Destiny on principle, because they put out what they realized was a subpar product and said, oh, don't worry, we'll just update it later. And then whenever they release The Taken King, it's like, oh, here, buy this. Because this is the game that we initially had wanted to put out. Well, no, I shouldn't have to buy the game that you wanted to put out when you put out a subpar product.
Totally agree.
So, but in a game like that, I want to play Destiny because of the fact that you can find items that actually help you. But at the same time, the whole principle thing keeps me away from Destiny. If I ever play it, believe me, it will be solely because I find it at a garage sale for $3.
Yeah.
With Blizzard, I kind of wanted to take that same stance when I saw the microtransaction thing, despite the fact that it looks interesting and fun. However, some of the stuff that they did indicate in the article from GameSpot actually does interest me and makes me feel a little better about Blizzard. One of the things, at first I was like, okay, so what if you get duplicate items? That was addressed. Every loot box contains at least one rare quality or better item, according to the item's description. However, if your loot box contains an item that's already in your collection, you will instead receive credits. So at least that's something. It's not going to be like a complete waste, so where they end up with 19 blue hair dyes. That's a good thing. Also, looking ahead, according to the article, Blizzard has said that all future Overwatch maps and characters will be free. The game actually was released with 21 playable characters, so if they add all that together, that's a positive. You won't have to pay for any of the new maps or anything like that, and I'm totally a fan of that.
Yeah.
An update for Overwatch will be coming in June, so that's just less than a month away. That they're going to be introducing competitive play, which was actually dropped from the initial launch, I would assume, because it wasn't fully up yet and running properly. They're saying mid to late June, so that could be anywhere from 3 to 5 weeks, would you say. However, they don't have any timetable for new characters or maps that might be coming out. That said, I kind of find myself really wanting to get this, even though it's the type of game that I will likely most definitely suck at. I think I actually texted that to you, that the game highly interested me.
Well, and the timing of it, too. We just had Uncharted 4 come out. There's really, I don't have the release schedule in front of me, of course, but, I mean, there's really nothing on the immediate horizon. I mean, we've got E3 coming up. That's going to distract all of us. There's going to be tons of news. So most publishers are kind of scared to put a big AAA title out right now in fear that it's going to be overshadowed by the E3 conference in a couple of weeks. So, I mean, the timing is great. There's really nothing fresh coming down the pipe here, so it's a great time to release a new game, even though it is a bit of a gamble, because this is entirely in the spotlight right now.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I think that in a lot of people's eyes, Blizzard can do no wrong.
Definitely.
And from what I read about all the beta testing, everybody fell in love with this game, whether it was because they were Blizzard fanboys to begin with, or it was just a lot of fun as it looks. I think that this is the company that really, if you're going to get a game from this releasing in the next couple of weeks, this is really the one to get. And like I said, I mean, it looks unique. It looks kind of fun. It looks like it's half intended for kids and half intended for adults, hence the teen rating. Kind of a bridge between generations, with the way the gameplay is, it's very cartoony at times, and yet it does have copious amounts of blood in certain spots, or blood-like substances, which would appeal to maybe some of the older crowd, like ourselves. Who knows? I mean, I think it could be a lot of fun.
It's a good time to be a Blizzard fan because you get this new game, plus you've got the World of Warcraft movie only a couple of weeks away now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're a Blizzard fanboy, you're living in good times right now. 2016 has been pretty good to you so far.
Yeah, and the only problem that they'll have is that they'll have to take time away from their gaming to go see the movie.
Yes.
So, who knows? But let's move on, because if you've been paying attention to the video game news over the past week or so, week and a half, Disney actually announced a couple weeks ago, or within the past couple weeks, that production of the Infinity franchise has been halted along with all video game development at Disney. That's actually a really big deal. As a result, according to Game Informer, Ron Gilbert wants his games back from Disney too. If you know Ron Gilbert, you'll know that he has actually been a developer in a number of games, including Maniac Mansion and the Monkey Island series.
A couple of good games there.
Yeah. He wants those IPs back. He would like to purchase them, according to a tweet that he sent out at Grumpy Gamer, is his Twitter tag. He says, "Dear Disney, now that you're not making games, please sell me my Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion." He actually misspelled his own game. And Mansion IP. I'll pay real actual money for them. Which he sent out yesterday.
Good offer, real actual money.
Yeah, real actual money. Disney loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He's not the first one to express interest in recovering those IPs that Disney will no longer be making. DSX creator Warren Spector actually expressed interest in recovering unreleased concepts, quote-unquote, from Disney. He mentioned three ideas under development at Junction Point before it was shut down here this past week. So, some of these requests about these intellectual properties kind of makes sense, but it kind of also makes you wonder, what was the plan to do with them when they shut the actual game development wing down at Disney? Do you think they were going to do anything with these properties?
No, I don't think this changes. I think Maniac Mansion was dead and buried. I thought there had been some talk of, like, remastering Monkey Island, or maybe it actually was remastered. I don't pay too much attention to that franchise anymore. But I haven't heard the name Maniac Mansion since the old Nintendo game. That's been probably 25 years now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm guessing Disney didn't have any kind of... There was never going to be... Disney Infinity 4.0 wasn't going to be centered around Monkey Island. You know,
yeah.
These franchises were dead and buried. But, I mean, yeah, sell it to the guy and let him do something with it. You know, I've got the article called up here, Brian, and I'm looking at the screen cap, which is obviously made in the same engine as one of my favorite games of all time, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, which was also a LucasArts game, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Looks exactly like it, and I love those games. I would love to see somebody take these old point-and-click PC adventures and revitalize them somehow, remaster them a little bit, release them for $5 on the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, do something with it. And Disney, if you're not going to do it, sell it to Ron Gilbert. He's offering you real actual money to do something. Take it. Let the guy make some more games.
Exactly. And I look at some of these situations where these companies just sit on properties and never do anything with them. Hello, Mutant League. And it just makes no sense to me because you're sitting on this thing with no plans to do anything with it. In the meantime, you're kind of depriving the world of that kind of thing, and I don't know if you're doing it solely for the sole purpose of exercising the power that you have over that, or if they're trying to, like, drive up the value for these things, but if you do have somebody that's willing to do something with them, that wants to do something with them, I can't imagine being in his spot, having come up with a creation, and honest to God, I had completely not even thought about Monkey Island forever.
Yeah,
but the moment it was mentioned in this article, I literally walked downstairs into the basement, and I still have the GameCube version of it.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm totally like all up in that and
fun game.
Yeah, whenever I get my gaming area set up, it'll be one that we throw in the old Wii and get a little Monkey Island time in. Which would sound totally different if I was talking to my wife. Either way,
as much as I applaud Disney for how they handle things on the film and TV side, I mean, obviously they've done amazing things with the Marvel Universe, and they've brought Star Wars back. They made Star Wars relevant again. They do a good job with the TV stuff. The movies, the Cinderella movie, they're doing a Beauty and the Beast movie. Those high-quality films, they suck at the video game side. You know, they spent all that money on Star Wars Infinity last fall. I mean, I remember the Game Informer cover for that, and it was just going to be the next big thing, breaking down how they came up with the designs for the figurines, all that stuff. They just dropped the ball continuously on the video game side. Very disappointed with where the Star Wars video game direction is going. And now, you know, they're doing stuff with other franchises. They just need to walk away and let that, into more capable hands.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, we'll actually move on to some people that are actually making some sales. One of, Disney's recent partners, you could say, particularly with the Marvel Universe, and that would be Sony. Of course, this has to do with the PlayStation 4. Just this morning, they released their predictions for fiscal year 2016. They're expecting the PlayStation 4 to sell 20 million units this year, between April 1st, 2015 and March 31st, 2016. I'm assuming that's correct. I don't know if that's just a prediction of what they actually did sell, or if they actually got the, they might have got the dates wrong in the article, to where it's April 1st, 2016 and March 31st, 2017. Because it is a prediction, and it did just break this morning, so I would assume that.
Yeah, they got to be off on the years there.
Yeah, if that's true, that would mark a 50% increase in the current worldwide sales total, which presumably, according to GamesIndustry.biz, sits somewhere north of the 36 million units that it has sold so far, which it announced in January. Sony also expects the Games and Network Services division, which houses the PlayStation business, to increase sales by 8.3% over the course of the year, resulting in an operating income just over 135 billion yen. Which, if you don't know how much that is in dollars, neither do I.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Enough. Enough to make your life easier. If you look at the sales, for the past several years, you've actually got 14.8 million in the fiscal year 2014, 17.7 million units in 2015, and the 2016 fiscal year, with the prediction of 20 million. So you're looking at an increase of, 2.3 million units over that fiscal year. It's unknown if they're banking on the PlayStation Neo in these numbers that they're planning on selling, but I don't know how much of an impact that'll have. Honestly,
yeah,
I'm sure they'll get some impact.
My gut, Brian, says that they're banking on less about the Neo and more about VR in the fall. And they're really banking on Uncharted sales, of course, are starting to come in. I think that's already sold, like, I'm just pulling this number out of, off the top of my head here. It's like 2.5 million. Mm-hmm. I mean, the sales for Uncharted have been off there. I think it broke some kind of record yesterday for Sony sales. So, I mean, that game is selling. So I think they're really banking on VR in the fall. And then Last Guardian, of course, is coming, we assume at least. And a huge announcement at E3, which has got to be God of War. And they're hoping that people get excited. Even though there's no way that game is coming out this year, they're hoping that that game alone, coupled with VR, Uncharted, Last Guardian, moves a shit ton of consoles.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, if you look at the independent properties, I don't know how much God of War 4 will actually move units at this point. Because most of the people who have bought or would buy into God of War 4 have probably already bought the system.
That's a good point.
I think that something like 4K, and you had Phil Spencer came out last week from Microsoft and talked about how they didn't really have any plans on coming up with an Xbox One and a half, like PlayStation is with the PlayStation 4, which was called the 4.5, for a while. He said that they didn't really have any plans on that because they don't feel the technology is advanced enough to actually justify doing such a thing. And I wonder how much, I mean, we've said it on this show too, that it's because of that we're not really all that interested in a Neo. And the only things that we've heard about it have been kind of a negative thing and how it'll impact gamers with two different versions of the game and basically alienating any kind of indie developers and things like that. Kind of discourage indie developers from going out and putting stuff out on the PlayStation 4 because they got to make two versions of the game. I just really wonder what's going on, because if it doesn't have some sort of new tech or something that actually has some kind of appeal, they'll clearly get some bumps in sales right off the bat. And Sony, once you get that console, they don't care what happens to the console after you buy your initial one.
Yeah.
I just don't know how much of an impact that unit is going to have.
I really think they're overestimating how many people are going to double dip. You know, if those guys like us that bought a PS4 at launch or soon after launch, I really think they're expecting more people to rush out, and they got to have the latest and greatest thing. And as tempting as that is, the Neo is going to have to really blow things out of the water for me to even consider buying one. I've got my PS4. It works perfectly fine. I don't need it to be any faster. Our mutual friend Mart has brought up on the show a couple of times that they can't even achieve the frame rates that the PS4 is capable of now.
Yeah.
What's the point of cranking it, like, 120 frames per second? Well, if developers can't find a way to make that happen, what's the point? And do you really have to have it be that smooth? I mean, isn't 60 frames a second enough? 30 frames a second enough?
Yeah.
I mean, we're just getting carried away with the expectations here, and I think Sony is doing the exact same thing with how many people they expect to buy two consoles. It's ridiculous.
And there are residual costs to it as well, unintended consequences. They're putting all these stressors on the video game industry, and as much as the digital downloads and all that other fun stuff they're becoming more popular to just do a digital download, which is fine and wonderful, but increasing the amount of frame rates and things like that increases the size of the game. Increasing the size of the game increases the amount of time it takes to download. Increasing the amount that it takes to download increases the amount of data that's got to flow, which increases the amount that people have to spend on their Wi-Fi as well in their home, or their data. And then you look at the amount of space on your hard drives is being eaten up by these larger games. And it's one thing after another that you end up with all these unintended consequences. And the developers, if they've got to develop even more frame rate, then they've either got to develop new methods in order to do that, or they have to put more manpower into it, which which raises their cost, which then at some point, if you want a copy of this game, it's no longer going to be $60. It's going to be $80.
Well, and what happens when you have to develop two different versions of the same game? More delays. That's what we're going to see. That's my biggest hang-up on the two different versions of these games. If Naughty Dog had been tasked to make a separate version, a standard version of Uncharted 4, and then an enhanced version for the Neo, would we have the game yet? We probably would have got delay number 4 for that. And hey, it's coming. You know, just be patient, and we'd be sitting here nothing to play. We'd play Rocket League some more. Because
yeah.
That game would not have been released. I mean, I really think, I'm not trying to be all tinfoil hat and paranoid here, but I really think this whole thing, these two separate development games, is really going to slow down the development time, and it's just going to take forever for these games to come out.
It will. It will, and, you know, 20 million, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, if they reach that, that's good for them. It's a pretty good, 8.3% increase.
Yeah, I mean, this article reads like a very good thing to hand out to your shareholders at like a meeting. Hey, 20 million, that's what we're aiming for, and everybody nods and eats another donut. You know, it's like, that's great, you know, we're going to make more money, but, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. I think it's a very bold and ambitious prediction, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree, and that's one of the things that could be missed with that article, is it was a fiscal release, so they are looking at their shareholders, and that's what it's directed towards, and all a prediction is a guesstimate of what you're going to do, with absolutely no bearing on what will actually happen.
Yeah, it'd be like you and me predicting that this episode is going to get 5,000 listens, you know?
5,000?
Yeah, that's what we're going for. That's I'm making that prediction. So
I had 8,800.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
this is kind of like the Price is Right now. We don't want to get over. So I figure if it's 5,001, I win.
We'll just say whoever guesses one is going to win.
There you go. Good thing. I hope our shareholders are listening so they hear those bold predictions.
Yeah. All right. Well, I picked the next story, which would be our final story of the morning, solely for you, Ryan.
Yes.
Going to Polygon.com, this news broke just a couple of days ago. It says, wrecked by the big boys 15 years ago, veterans return to NASCAR video games. Now, I believe... that you've told me you play NASCAR Heat still?
No, I play NASCAR Racing 2003 seasons.
Okay.
iRacing as well, but I am very familiar with NASCAR Heat, so it still applies, and I cannot believe it's been 15 years since that game came out, but sure enough, the last version was NASCAR Heat 2002.
Yeah. I knew you played an early 2000 version, and I couldn't remember. I thought it was Heat, but...
No, I enjoyed Heat as well. I mean, it's not, certainly not as realistic as NASCAR Racing 2003 season, which is the great-great-grandfather of what we know as iRacing today, at least the NASCAR portion of it. Made by the same guys, uses an evolved version of that NASCAR Racing 2003 season engine. So, I mean, without that game, we would not have NASCAR, or iRacing today, rather.
Yeah, and this is kind of a long... article, but what I'm going to do, I'm going to kind of break it down to the simplest terms. Tom Dusenberry was a game developer, was in New England at a New England Speedway, talking to some of the NASCAR folks that were around. And then they were talking to a kid who said that he was talking to one of the people there about the different NASCAR racing titles, and they talked about how much the kids love the game. And they do. I mean, if you played a NASCAR game, it's one of those things, if you race games, it's just different than your Gran Turismos and your Forzas and things like that. It just adds a little bit different flavor, which they can be a lot of fun. I think my last one was Total Team Racing. It was the last NASCAR game I played from EA. Which was a lot of fun. But over the past decade, they've been thinking about doing this, and essentially what's happening is they finally put it together. And this fall, NASCAR Heat Evolution will be coming to the PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One. They're planning on doing a lot of different things with the game, which is much further in the out. In the article, I'm trying to find it now. Of course I can't find it. Why would I be able to find it after the fact?
It's a long article.
But yeah, I mean, it's a really long article.
It's one of the longest video game articles. Considering the content that it's NASCAR based, I'm like, how did they find that much to write about NASCAR?
Yeah, and what they're planning on doing, they're going to have full 43 car fields.
Nice.
They're just planning on packing in as much realism to the NASCAR experience as they can possibly do, which after a decade plus, I'm sure they've had a lot of time to research and think on this.
Yeah.
Now, with it coming out on the three main consoles that are in existence today, do you think that you'd be leaning towards the PC, given that you have all the different peripherals for that, or do you think you're going to be leaning towards the PlayStation version?
I would probably go PC, based on what you just said there. I do not have a PlayStation 4 compatible wheel. I'm still using my old Logitech G27, which of course they couldn't make compatible, with Sony's latest console. It works fine on the PlayStation 3, but they made a new wheel that's PlayStation 4 compatible, and I just can't afford to spend another $400 to buy a second steering wheel. So I would definitely go PC. My PC has enough power to run contemporary games with most of the graphics turned up. So yeah, I would definitely be leaning that direction. And yeah, I mean, this definitely piques my interest. It'll be very interesting to see where this fits in contemporary stock car racing games with, when you stack it up against iRacing. Because if you have a PC, obviously, if you're hardcore NASCAR, you probably already have your racing game.
Yeah. And one of the things that they did say is they indicated that some of the frustration with the NASCAR series is they simply made the games too hard. Each year they'd make it harder and harder, which they did.
Yeah.
The plan to address this is to have different difficulty settings so where you can actually customize the game to play like you play, which is kind of cool because they said that they're going to have like sort of a simulation thing to where everything that you do actually does make a difference because it's this quote from Mark Martin. In this sport, everyone wants to win. So the challenge for us is, regardless of your skill level, that you get to live out your fantasy of being competitive with the heroes of the sport. He also said NASCAR games have become almost prohibitive. You now have to know how to set up the car precisely within a race just to be competitive, or you'll get a nice top 38 finish out of it, which is totally not fun.
No, it's not fun. I mean, when you have an ill-handling race car, no matter if you're playing pole position or iRacing, it is not fun to be 2 seconds a lap slower than the leader. It's very frustrating, and at the end of the day, you can make it as much of a simulation as you want. These are video games. You play a game to have fun. I don't want to be lapped 5 times in a 100-lap race because I can't get my car set up perfectly. So racing games, NASCAR in particular, have always been about walking that fine line between giving people that are looking for a simulation a realistic experience and making it fun to people that just want to play a game. And I totally get what he's saying there. It's very hard to make everybody happy in these NASCAR video games.
Oh, absolutely. And I finally found the things that it's going to include here. NASCAR Heat Evolution is promising all of the structure of a simulation representing a full season in its sport. So what you're going to get, all 23 real-world tracks. So you want to go to Bristol? Have fun with that. You want to go to Talladega? Have fun with that. Texas, Nevada, whatever. Las Vegas, I guess, not Nevada. Charlotte, okay, have fun. At 36 different events under their real names. So your advertisers are actually going to be included in this. And 43 car fields in all of them. All 36 of the racing teams are guaranteed to start under NASCAR's 2-year-old charter system. So they will be represented with 4 additional teams as well. Dusenberry Martin Racing and Monster Games will lean on NASCAR's broad licensing agreements and rights to bring as much as they can into the game. Including many, many recognizable sponsors. More than 1,000 will have some presence in the coming game, whether it's a corner panel sticker or something larger. Apparently in the video, or the brief alpha build that they have, a Bojangles billboard was there at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So, they're going for realism in this game, and I think that's a really super smart move. If they're going for realism, but they're going to make it also accessible to those with lesser skill.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely piques my interest. I mean, it's been a good week for NASCAR as far as video games are concerned, because we get this news. I think a couple of days ago it dropped that Forza was going to include a NASCAR element to it. So, I mean, if you're a stock car fan, and stock car, I mean, the popularity has diminished a little bit over the last couple of years, but man, NASCAR is still wildly popular here in the United States, and well, and all over the world. And it'll just be interesting to see how this game stacks up against, like, the next iteration of Project Cars and Forza, because if you remember, Project Cars had stock cars in it, too, but nowhere near it didn't have the NASCAR license, so you didn't get the drivers, you didn't get the sponsors, you didn't get the correct tracks. Mm-hmm. This game has the potential to give NASCAR fans exactly what they want. They won't have to settle for something, a lesser experience, in one of those other games.
Yeah, and if you are a fan of the old games, which I actually was, I still remember playing NASCAR 98 with my dad. We'd have a blast with that. Back when I still lived at home. I had actually just come back home from basic training. picked that up and we would play it all the time. They're going back to the original NASCAR Heat source code to actually develop this game.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're saying they used a hybrid approach where they based some of the things on the old architecture choices, but were able to do what they wanted on the better hardware that we have today. So I think that's pretty awesome because you're going to have a little bit of a throwback feel when it comes to the game, even though they're going to be updated and maybe run a little bit smoother than back in 2002.
Yeah, the only, skeptical, just to kind of play devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. a lot of what they're preaching at the moment reminds me of NASCAR the Game. Do you remember that one on PS3 that came out in 2010, 2011, I think it was? A lot of the claims they're making in this article remind me of that, and that game was really, really bad. So
yeah.
Hopefully they don't go that route, but NASCAR the Game was terrible. Don't follow their example. Hopefully they learn from that and they go a correct direction.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that you always have to worry about, too, when they're doing something like this. Hopefully they're ambitious enough. Maybe we'll see something at E3 from them.
It'd be a good time.
If they have an alpha build already, then I'm sure that they've been playing around with it, and maybe we'll see some sort of an announcement either at E3 or as a sideshow. They did, however, this week actually named their cover boy after the All-Star race that was in NASCAR, and that would be Carl Edwards. He would be on the cover of NASCAR Heat Evolution, which is supposed to launch on September 13th. So right as your kids are going back to school, that'll be coming out. So you'll have something to do while you're sitting at home by yourself with no kids in the house. So I think that pretty much wraps that up. Did you have anything else going on that you noticed or wanted to mention?
We pretty much covered it. Oh, by the way, play Uncharted 4. I've got the review up on the site. Definitely want to play that. If you've got a PlayStation 4, I can't recommend that one enough. It was so much fun.
You beat it in a pretty short amount of time.
I couldn't stop playing. When I got my copy, Brian, I was like, I'm going to take this and savor it. I'm not going to rush through, play a chapter a day. That's what I'm going to limit myself to. Yeah, I beat it in like 4 days. I just couldn't stop. And it is a long game. It was like 16 and a half, 17 hours to get through. So, great game.
Yeah, I saw that somebody had made a live-action movie of Uncharted 4 using a drone camera.
Nice.
And they did it all in one take or something like that.
That's awesome.
So I haven't watched it yet, but it is kind of interesting. The other fun thing that I saw, and just as it's not really a news item, but just a fun thing that I saw, is apparently somebody has decided to make a Fallout 4 mod, which they're saying will take up to several years to actually complete.
Oh, my God.
They're adding an entire level that is the city of Seattle, Washington.
Oh, my God.
That takes some dedication. And,
yeah.
And I don't know if they're doing a whole team and just using solely the modification software, but according to what Bethesda told us, it should theoretically be possible because they're putting all the tools that they use to develop the game into that mod program.
They even included the Space Needle, so they have that.
Yeah, they actually had a picture of it, like a still shot, in the little brief article that I saw. Did have the Space Needle, which is kind of fun. I'm kind of interested to see. I'm interested in seeing what they do, I guess.
Yeah. I wonder how many radiation points a cup of Starbucks is going to include in that game.
That'd be so funny. But they'd have to call it something else, wouldn't they?
I don't know. I just remember that everything in that game is, horribly irradiated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, yeah. They went a little over the top in this one.
Yeah, it'll end up like Buckstar something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, enough where people can recognize it.
So, who knows? Either way, that's going to do it for this week's show. Ryan, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Best place to talk to me is on Twitter, at RyHamner is where you can find me. I love talking video games. We're in the middle of the playoffs for my favorite team, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Hopefully that goes beyond tonight. So if you like to talk hockey, hit me up on there. Basically anything, movies, TV. We got the X-Men coming out here on Friday. Lots of stuff. It's a great time to be living in nerd culture, and let's ride this thing out as long as we possibly can. And, of course, the website is gameblock.com. Don't forget the hyphen between game and block. And that's it.
Yeah, and I actually saw Civil War this week, finally. And ever since we watched Civil War, then Patrick has decided that he is going to watch everything he can find on Netflix that has Spider-Man in it.
Nice.
Spider-Man was probably the highlight of the movie, I think, with the way they handled him.
Yeah.
And Marissa Tomei, spoiler alert, she's still got it.
She's by far the most attractive Aunt May that we've ever seen. Far cry from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. Aunt May wasn't quite as up there in that one, but, you know, yeah. And she made it work. I mean, it felt authentic.
And I don't want to give too many spoilers, because they absolutely should check out the spoiler cast both at GameBlock.com and at HowlingGeek.com. It kind of threw me off what they did, because I didn't realize that she was in there. And then whenever they had Tony Stark sitting there talking to Marissa Tomei, I was like, what the hell is this? Yeah. And just the way they folded Spider-Man into the story, the way they folded Ant-Man into the story, I like the way they did those things. I like how they really had quite a bit more meat than I expected with the Black Panther character. There were so many things I liked, some things that I didn't like about the movie. You said it was in your second tier of Marvel movies, Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and that's a knee-jerk reaction, Brian. Like, after I see it, I've only seen it the one time. I haven't had a chance to get back and check it out for a second viewing yet. But I always try to digest things a little bit instead of having that, like, oh, it's the greatest ever, you know? Yeah. So I'm not willing to put it on that first tier with Winter Soldier, Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and the original Iron Man just yet.
Yeah.
But I could definitely, I can't fault anyone that immediately dubbed this the best of the MCU movies, because, I mean, they make a good point. It is so well done, and really washes away the stink of the last superhero movie that hit theaters, the absolutely horrible Batman v Superman.
Yeah, and one of the things that I did like about the movie is that I kind of agreed with you in the second tier thing. The more I think about it as a movie, and as movies like that are supposed to, what they're supposed to do, I think it totally succeeded. Because as I think more about the Team Cap versus Team Iron Man thing, the more I say, well, which is the right team?
Yeah, there's definitely, it's not a black and white film. It's definitely a lot, you got to think in shades of gray. Everybody in this movie has a legitimate point to their argument. There is no clear winner in that argument.
Yeah, and it's very, I don't want to say timely, because, to be honest, we've kind of lived in this world since 2001.
Yeah.
And September 11th and everything.
Yeah.
But it's very kind of, it relates to today's society and the world as we have it today. And I think it was just very well done on that front. Because after the fact, I mean, we had a little bit of a discussion on Twitter with Lee and a couple other people. And they have really good points, and he thinks, like Lee from PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, he actually, he said that he came away on Team Iron Man, which he didn't think was the intent of the film.
Yeah.
And my argument was, I think having the debate was exactly the intent of the film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think people having reactions like Lee did, really proves just, I think the filmmakers would be very pleased to hear his take on the film, because I think that was the goal here, was to not have a clear right or wrong and make people kind of think, because let's face it, we live in a society today where we have little tolerance, for the other side of the argument.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think you can kind of take this film and look at it through a lens and kind of filter what they're trying to say here down into, hey, you know, you have a point, but maybe you should at least consider where the other guy is coming from. I really believe that that was the ultimate message that they were trying to tell with this film, and that's pretty deep for a superhero movie.
Yeah. And sadly, I think it's being overmatched by people feeling that they have to make a decision and they're not actually looking at the question that's being asked.
Yeah, I think you're kind of missing the point of the movie if you're, well, you know, I'm still on this, I'm still on that. It's fine, you can still enjoy the movie by looking at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more subtext going on here beneath these two Marvel superheroes duking it out. I mean, there's a lot of depth to this film. It's definitely the deepest of the Marvel films, I think.
And in all honesty, I think Black Panther had the moment of the film when, and probably got it more than any other character, because I, you know, just the way he came across and said about how he himself got caught up in vengeance.
Yep, totally.
And so he kind of had an awakening, and kind of, I think that he just got that message more than any of the other characters. Everybody else was kind of self-absorbed and either upset at the situation or they were upset at whatever it is that they lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good flick. If you haven't seen it yet, go ahead, and I'm sorry if I spoiled too much of it, but go out and see it. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter as well. You can find me at ToonsBrian, ToonsBrian. Also, if you want to email the show, by all means, do that. TheOneUpClub@gmail.com. No hyphen in that one. It's TheOneUpClub@gmail.com. If you have any questions, by all means, go to OneUp.club in your internet browser, and you'll be able to find all kinds of contact information right there, including RSS feeds for this show and the One Up Club podcast network, as well as the Trending Topics Network, where you can also find this show on iTunes and really everywhere else. We're on iTunes for Game Blocks, Block Party podcast, the Johnny Good Times Fun Factory podcast. Now we've got One Up Power Up, and of course this show at the One Up Club podcast network. Also, at the Trending Topics Network, you'll be able to find great shows like Old School at the Movies and the Spanish Announce Table and a whole plethora of other shows, including Hanging with Heavy and a bunch of others that honestly I'm just terrible and can't remember off the top of my head, but be sure to check that out. Until next time, I'm Brian, he's Orion. Thank you very much for listening. This is One Up Heads Up on the One Up Club Podcast Network.